When I sit down and talk to an investor, I want to know what's important to you. You're good on the cash flow side, but you want to build some long-term equity. Well, okay, there's an asset class that might work for you. If you're paying a lot of tax, okay, well, let's take a look at that. And I really help them do what I do for myself first.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I'm your host, Justin Dixon. And today we've got Dave Zook, founder and CEO of The Real Asset Investor. Super interesting episode, partially because I grew up and spent time in Central PA, very close to where he lives, and grew up in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. So I know that area very, very well. So we chatted briefly about that. But then we talked a lot about his core four asset classes and how they can help people avoid or offset some of the tax liability that they're getting from passive income. But also one of them is actually offsetting ordinary or earned income, which is super interesting, especially if you are generating a lot of income from a day job or a business that you are operating. Very good episode, very interesting conversation with Dave. So let's get him on the pod. All right, Dave, welcome to the podcast, man. Happy to have you on.
All right, Justin, thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, no, let's jump right in. Maybe give us a little bit of an intro on kind of who you are, what you're doing, and always love to chat with people from Central Pennsylvania. I grew up about an hour above Harrisburg, so saw that you're in Lancaster. So I know Lancaster very, very well. So let's jump in.
Yeah, nice. So, well, most people don't know where Lancaster is. So glad to hear you know where Lancaster is. So grew up here all my life. I've been here since the day I was born. In fact, I live today about 3 miles where I was born. So I lived here in Lancaster all my life. Grew up in a very entrepreneurial, business-friendly family. My dad bought a modular building business the year I was born. So I grew up in that business. Today, we own several modular building companies. So I was very active in that business. I've grown up, and my dad was very successful. I saw him investing some of his money into real estate, farms and land and single-family homes, which he self-managed.
Got it.
And I just quickly realized when I was preteen, that's not what I was going to do when I grow up. So I sort of had a sour taste in my mouth for real estate from when I was a kid, from watching this self-management thing play out in front of me. So it's quite ironic. Today, I own 30,000 acres of real estate and a bunch of properties and self-storage and car washes and all that. But I wasn't going to own any real estate when I grew up. But anyway, the way it turned out, I built several successful businesses and got myself into a position where I started having to pay a lot of tax. And I'm paying $500,000 a year in tax. And I said, maybe I should focus not so much. I still want to make a lot of money, but maybe I should turn my focus a little bit toward keeping what I make.
Right.
So I heard Robert Kiyosaki talking about how you can make millions of dollars a year and pay no tax legally. And it drove me crazy because that wasn't my story. And so I hunted him down. I went on the Real Estate Guys Summit at Sea, spent the week with the Rich Dad team, Robert Kiyosaki and his tax guy and his real estate guy and his oil guys, and just really opened my eyes to what can be done if you're strategic and invest in real estate and use bonus depreciation, cost seg studies, and all that. So I went from paying $500,000 a year to paying zero federal income tax, and I've been living the tax-efficient life ever since. That was more than a decade ago.
Got it. Yeah, I was going to ask you kind of timing around kind of when, I guess, let's start in the beginning, because obviously you grew up in a family that had an entrepreneurial background, right? So you kind of were exposed to, call it an alternative lifestyle to what the masses are exposed to, which is get a good W-2 job, invest in your 401k, invest in the stock market, and hope you have enough money to retire. So you kind of bypassed all of that process, right? All of that time to realize that there is an alternative path. So how did you kind of get started? Did you start down that normal path and then divert later? Or is it just kind of day one, you're like, this is the route I'm going?
Yeah, I took some training and I was going to buy stocks and I was going to play the stock market and do the whole Wall Street thing. And I got caught up in this sort of mentorship thing and paid for training. And I quickly realized that it just wasn't my thing. I realized that the guys on the other end of the trade were smarter and better at this than I was. And again, it's not what I'm interested in. And so after I lost some money in the stock market, I quickly realized that's just not what I want to do either. Yeah. So in the interim, I'm doing my thing. I'm building businesses and not sure what to do with the rest of my life. I'm in my 20s. So I'm building these businesses. And really, when I realized that there is a way to keep the money that I was making and start investing in multifamily apartments and build up a portfolio first, I bought several hundred units of my own and ran out of my own money. And that was back in the day when I hardly knew how to spell syndication. I got into some syndicating. I put some deals together for just my family and bought several more apartment units. And then I expanded out to some business contacts that I had. I built up a reputation in the marketplace for business, but it was totally outside of owning multifamily apartment buildings. But I tapped into some of those relationships, got into the syndication world a little bit by mistake. I didn't venture into this thinking that I was going to syndicate deals and all that. I was just doing it because I love doing deals. I love people. I like doing good business.
Let's kind of maybe dig into a little bit of what you're doing kind of recently and now. Are a lot of the businesses and the real estate stuff that you're doing in Lancaster in Pennsylvania, or are you kind of not just solidified in the Pennsylvania, Central PA kind of geography?
So our modular businesses primarily are in Pennsylvania, but we have other builders. We like to go into Amish Mennonite communities throughout the United States, and we really like to take the product to the workforce. Okay. And as you probably know, we've got a really good workforce here in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. There's other areas of the country where they have a good workforce, but they may be out in the middle of Missouri, and they're not marketers. They just want to build stuff. And so we like to team up with not only build the stuff here ourselves, but also expand our reach, expand our geography, and tap into communities throughout the United States. So we've been doing that quite a lot, trying to keep up with demand, trying to work on the supply side and really make sure that we're in a good position to meet demand all across the country.
And these modular buildings, are they modular homes? So you're kind of having the Amish community kind of prefabricate these or build these modular buildings, or are they not just homes? There's other modular things you're building.
So they're second homes, primarily second homes, in the log cabin space. And then there's another sort of facet of the business there where we build tiny homes.
Yeah.
I told you we own several different modular building companies. We also have a modular building company where we build garages and storage sheds, all modular. And then we have a company where we build horse barns and chicken coops and dog kennels, all modular. And so we'll build them here at the shop and ship them across the country. Really, we got a whole bunch of totally finished out dog kennels that we ship to California.
Interesting. So how many businesses do you have now? Like, what's your kind of portfolio look like? And then we'll dig into some other of the real estate stuff you're doing.
I don't know. there are quite a few, but I'm involved in quite a few where I'm either owner or co-owner or partnered with. There's quite a few.
Got it. So let's maybe narrow that to what's your main focus right now.
So most of my time is actually spent in the investment world. So as you know, we have a large ATM portfolio. Over the last decade, we grew that from a sort of a friends and family fund to now being one of the top four ATM operators in the country.
Got it.
We also built a bunch of car washes. In fact, we're doing a site visit in car wash number 9 that we own that we just opened here a few weeks ago. We got 3 more that are coming out of the ground that are supposed to be open between now and the end of the year.
Yeah.
And 3 or 4 more that will open in Q1 of next year. So we were quite busy. Actually, right now we've got 14 active construction sites going on right now in the car wash space. So we're the Tommy's Express Car Wash. We're a franchisee. I believe we're the second largest Tommy's franchise. By the end of next year, we plan to be the largest Tommy's franchise in their portfolio. So very busy doing that. When you look at the deals that I send out to my investor base, we got 4 core asset classes, and it's really just a reflection of my own portfolio.
Okay.
I do this for myself first. And if I love the asset class, if I love the operations team, if I feel like an asset class that we have the potential to scale, then I'll take it out to my investor base. And it really kind of works like that. It's really a reflection of what I need for myself. And if it works, I send it out to my base and we get it funded.
Well, I want to dig into your core four asset classes. I want to kind of dig into each one of those. But before we jump into that, let's take a quick sponsor break and we'll be right back.
Whether you're trying to hire a full-time employee or a contractor to fill a gap, Hire Tomorrow can help. Hire Tomorrow is a boutique recruitment firm that has successfully filled sales and marketing, human resources, and technology positions with companies ranging from startups to Fortune 500. If you're struggling to find the right talent, check out HireTomorrow.com or reach out to recruiting@HireTomorrow.com to see how they can help.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. We've got Dave Zook on the podcast, and we started a kind of conversation talking about your entrepreneurial journey. You're in more businesses than you know what you're actually in, right? As far as co-owner and ownership. But before we broke, you talked about you're in four core asset classes, and you really kind of focus on, okay, I want to invest for myself. And then if I find a good operator, a good deal, then you'll push it out to your network of investors. So maybe let's talk about each of those four asset classes, because you already mentioned car washes and ATMs, which I'm assuming are two of the four. So maybe list off the other four, and then kind of we can kind of dig into what makes each of those asset classes attractive to you and potentially attractive to investors.
Yeah. So personally, I like diversification.
Yeah.
I talked to you about how I had a tax problem.
Yeah.
I teach a whole class on this and how to keep yourself tax efficient. One of the ways you can keep yourself tax efficient is you figure out how you're making your money,
yep.
Right? Are you making your money? Are you active? Is it active or ordinary income? Is it long-term capital gains? Is it passive income? Put that income in a bucket and then find an asset class with a bunch of depreciation and wipe out the tax liability on that specific income. So yeah. That's a lot of what I do. So when you look at those core asset classes, you may see an ATM that gives you a lot of cash flow. And I'm talking about diversification on this one, but it'll give you a bunch of cash flow. At the end of the 7-year contract, it's pretty much worthless. So you get no equity. So it's really a cash flow play and it's a tax play. Because What is an ATM? It's a piece of equipment. So you can take 100% bonus depreciation, 80% in year one. You can wipe out big chunks of your tax liability by investing in ATM. Not only do you get an aggressive cash flow stream, when you get good at this game, every year you start planning, okay, how many ATMs do I got to buy? How much equipment do I got to buy? How much of this asset class do I got to buy to knock down the tax liability? And then you start sort of laddering those to where you can really keep yourself tax efficient. It becomes a game. The better you get at the game, the more fun it becomes.
Interesting. All right. So ATMs is cash flow and some tax appreciation. Walk me through kind of the diversification model for you in the car washes. And then what are the other two core assets?
Okay, so the most extreme difference between two asset classes, when we talk about diversification, probably those two would be ATMs versus self-storage.
Okay.
ATMs, very aggressive cash flow stream, very aggressive on the tax side. You can wipe out big chunks of your tax liability using ATMs and taking that bonus depreciation. But then there's no equity appreciation.
Right.
On the self-storage side, our business model is we buy from a mom-and-pop operator, and then we're taking a 50 or 60,000 square foot facility, and we're adding 20 or 30,000 square feet of climate control. So it's a heavy value add.
Yeah.
And so we're spending money during the hold. You're not making a ton of money during the hold. Pretty modest cash flow play. It's also a pretty modest tax play.
Okay.
But what we've seen and what we've experienced is heavy equity appreciation. We make most of our money when we sell. And the last roll up that we did, you're talking 31% annualized returns on that investment. When I sit down and talk to an investor, I want to know what's important to you.
Yeah.
If you're making a couple hundred grand a year and you're good on the cash flow side, but you want to build some long term equity, well, okay, there's an asset class that might work for you. If you're paying a lot of tax, okay, well, let's take a look at that. And I really help them do what I do for myself first.
Yeah. You kind of let them guide you to the answer, right? Because to your point, sure, there's a solution to every problem. And so if you are looking for, hey, I want to kind of retire and I want to get a lot of cash flow, well, then ATMs may be a good asset, right? Where does car washes fit in there? Because it sounds like they're more of a development play or development. And then is it more of an appreciation and then cash flow later? Or how does that typically fit into your kind of spectrum of cash flow, appreciation, tax?
Yeah. So within 5 years, we expect to have somewhere between 70 and 100 car washes built. Like I said, we've got 14 active construction sites going on right now. So really the play in car washes is very aggressive on the cash flow side. You get these up and stabilized, you can make some real cash flow. It's also aggressive on the tax side. I don't know if you know this, but there's something that's very unique to only two real estate asset classes that I know of, and that is car washes and gas stations. The only two buildings where you can actually deduct or take the depreciation on the building at the same speed you can take depreciation on the equipment. So you don't have to do a cost take study. The building is considered equivalent. Well, the building, you can write off the same pace as the equipment inside the building.
Yeah.
So you could build the building and take 80% bonus depreciation in year one, 100% overall. So very aggressive on the tax side, very aggressive on the cash flow side. And what we've seen is the institutional appetite that's trying to kind of make an entry into the tunnel car wash space. It's very aggressive. You got institutions that are desperately trying to get their foot in the door in the space. And it's very hard because it's so fragmented. Of the 60,000-ish car washes that are out there, there's only about a tiny percentage of those car washes that are actually owned by an institution. Or there's a tiny fraction of those car washes or those owners that own three or more. Most of them are three or less. So it's very hard for an institution to come in and really take a position.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
because they want to come in and write
a bunch of those mom and pops. Yeah.
Yep. They want to come in and take a position. But if you roll up 30 different mom and pops, you're liable to end up with 15 different kinds of equipment run on 15 different kinds of software. And I mean, it's a total cluster.
Yeah.
And so what we're doing is we're building Tommy's Express car washes. It's some of the best equipment, some of the best software, some of the best technology in the space. And we're getting it set up to where we're building a business that we would hate to sell, but we'd be crazy not to, because we're seeing some of these institutions, we're seeing some of these exit multiples, 20x plus, 20 times EBITDA plus. And so that's got us excited. I saw this play out in the self-storage space. Like I told you, we had a rule up almost 2 years ago. We ruled up 26 of our properties and sold them to a REIT out of Chicago. So I know what it's like when you've got institutions that are getting really excited about a specific asset class. Yeah. And we see that developing in the car wash space and we're excited about it.
No, that's interesting. I look at some of the big multifamily deals that are out there. There's a lot of institution, because that's the space that I know way better than any of the three that you've mentioned so far. And institutions are obviously coming in there as well and buying portfolios of syndicators and things like that. Especially, I'm hearing a lot of big institutional buyers that have dry powder right now are waiting for the continued pain that is being experienced across real estate, but a lot in the commercial multifamily value add kind of space. So with your storage, is it similar? Because obviously you're doing heavy value add. So are you buying them with variable rate debt similar to you would like a multifamily value add asset? Or how do you structure those deals?
We're getting fixed rate debt. We're getting construction financing for the build out. So no, almost entirely fixed rate debt.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, that's the safest play to go because you know what your debt service is versus changing on a minute by minute basis effectively. So we got three of the four. So what's the fourth core asset that you're excited about or interested in? Or
so I've been a natural gas investor for the last right around 5 years. And I teamed up with a family in Pittsburgh. And one of the things that attracted me to this family was they're one of the lowest cost gas producers in the country. So I invested my own money with them for several years and then started the last 3 years. I've had a fund open and we're investing in natural gas directly with the driller. And so you got to believe in the longer term natural gas story. When I see the fundamentals in developing, it's quite exciting for the asset class. In the next 3 years, more than doubling our capacity to ship overseas. It's kind of a big deal when you recognize what the price of gas is in Europe and Asia and Japan. It's 10 times, oftentimes 10 times the price of ours here in the United States. So seeing the development and being able to ship, and then also the natural gas has been in a bear market most of the last 10 years. And so it's been an underinvested in asset class. And that's always exciting when I see that. For me, it feels like a big opportunity. The other thing is, I told you about how I take care of my own tax liability. And I have an income bucket over here that's full of ordinary income. Well, I got to figure out a way to shield that. So the other three asset classes I talked about, that's passive income and passive losses and all that. This is a little bit different. You're going into an active drilling site and you're capturing the depreciation, which will offset the tax liability on your ordinary incomes or any income. So that's kind of a big deal for me because I'm always looking at that. I'm managing my different asset or my different income buckets and making sure that I can stay tax efficient.
So you're saying if you're a business owner or you are earning some type of income, whether you're a salesperson, you make a ton of money, a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, you can offset that earned income by investing in natural gas as opposed to any other asset class other than there's like one or two others probably you know about that can offset some ordinary income. But like you said, ATMs, car washes, multifamily, self-storage, that's going to offset the passive income that you generate from that asset and other assets in that passive income bucket, but they're not touching what you're earning. So you can be earning $500,000 a year, you're still liable from a federal tax perspective on all of that stuff, right? So that offsets some of that ordinary earned income.
Yeah, and look, we don't start with the tax piece.
Right.
It's got to make sense. It's got to be a good business. It's got to make sense from the income side as well. So we're investing, we're investing cash to bring us a nice return on our investment. And that's why it's important when I talked about one of the lowest cost gas producers in the country, where many of the bigger companies, their break even is north of $2 per empty hours is somewhere in that 130 to 140 range right now. So, I mean, you got, that's important when you're trying to make a really nice return on your cash.
Yeah.
So we don't start with the tax, but we pair the two. At the end of the day, we're trying to build wealth, right? So it has to do with income first. But then it also has to do with, okay, how can I keep the money that I'm earning? How can I wipe out one of my biggest costs ever? If you can knock out 37%, your 37% tax, that's a 37% first year return on your investment, right? So that's the way we look at it. We like to invest for income, and then we like to keep ourselves tax efficient, keep the money that we earn.
And so if somebody is listening to this and they want to invest in these things, do you have a fund for each of these core four assets that somebody get involved in, or is it they can invest in like specific deals, or how do you kind of bring investors into the fold?
We do. So assuming we have the capacity, we'll open up to our whole database and we'll send out the deal. I mean, obviously, most of the time, I'm the biggest investor in the deal with my own cash. Remember, I'm putting these things together for myself first.
Right.
And so then I send it out to my investor base. Sometimes if that deal is constrained, there's been years where we only got, say, $25 million allocation, then I'll send out to my current investors. But it looks like we'll have plenty of room this year. You get on our mailing list, you'll see some of these deals come out and you'll get a notification when they're available.
Are your deal structures, are you accredited only, or do you also have a 506B where you can get in as a sophisticated, or how does that work for you guys?
All of our deals are 506C, which means we legally can only take accredited investors.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm curious to go back to the Lancaster and what you guys are doing in the local market and how you're engaging the local workforce, because the other side of my world is recruiting. So I do a lot of work in that space. So I'm curious kind of how you started kind of just engaging with the Amish and the Mennonite communities there. And I grew up around them and I know their work ethic. And so probably couldn't find a better workforce, especially when you're trying to build stuff.
Yeah. So when you look anywhere in the United States and you see an Amish or Mennonite community, the most likely they originated from either Lancaster County, Pennsylvania or Holmes County, Ohio. And so with deep connections in the Amish community, we know some of these areas, and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we do our research and find a community. I've learned a long time ago, it's a lot more efficient to take the work to where the workforce is than try to ship the workers to the factory to get your stuff built. And so what we try to do is get behind a community and sometimes finance them, sometimes help them get set up, get started, and do whatever we got to do to get behind them and start producing whatever it is, the asset class, whatever it is that we're producing, whether it's modular horse barns or modular tiny homes or whatever it is. And we tap into these communities and let them help us build and meet the demand that we have. Many times, like I said, a community like that, specifically an Amish community like that, very slow to adapt to any kind of technology. These guys are builders. Yeah. So you can understand what that would look like from a marketing perspective and getting out there and reaching your customers. So we're very good at that. So we love to bring those two things kind of together, the building part with the marketing part. We go out there and work with them.
Yeah, that's super fascinating. And yeah, like I said, great workforce to partner with for sure. We're recording this in early-ish October 2023. And you've been investing for a long, long time. And it sounds like you've been exposed to a lot of different asset classes across real estate and self-storage and car washes and all that. What's kind of your outlook for the rest of this year? And maybe where do you see large opportunity coming in the next 6, 12, 18 months?
Yeah, so I believe the best opportunity is in business is to go out there and figure out who you can serve and figure out how many people you can serve and really just kind of dig into that. Because when you have a business model that goes out and serves people well,
you're
most likely going to be successful. And so we target communities where, I don't know how much you know about the ATM space. Conventional wisdom will tell you that cash is dead and nobody's using cash anymore. Well, I can tell you the people who we're serving, the immigrants, the lower income, the unbanked, underbanked, EBT card carrier, that's our customer. And they survive on cash. So we find those communities and provide that service to them. This thing becomes their bank. This is how they transact. This becomes their bank. And so we serve those communities. And the same way with car wash, I don't know. Or self-storage. The reason I really started getting interested in the self-storage space back in 2016 or 17, I saw how self-storage performed in bad times. At the time, I was building a portfolio of multifamily apartments, built up a portfolio of 3,000 to 4,000 doors. And I just felt like there was more potential downside than there was potential upside. Now, I started selling in 2019. So I left a little meat on the bone.
Right. But still did pretty well, I imagine.
But yeah, so I was watching his asset class. Self-storage was the best performing asset class coming out of 2008 to 2010. Number one, it was the least hardest hit negatively on the downside. And it was the best performing coming out of the Great Recession. So, and same way with 2020 to 2022, you have this asset class that acts almost like a hedge in your portfolio. When things are bad, it's a great time to own self-storage. So that's what sort of intrigued me and kind of brought me into that. So I saw this unfold and I wanted an asset class that could get me the stability I was looking for and when everything else was falling apart around us.
Yeah. And I think the one thing that intrigues me, because self-storage is an asset that I'm already starting to look at as an addition to the multifamily space. I still like it. I definitely think there's going to be some opportunity coming out of what we're going through right now. But the self-storage is interesting because you don't have to deal with tenants, right? If they stop paying for 90 days, you can auction off the stuff that's there.
30 days.
30 days. Got it. Okay. And so you don't have to deal with evictions, right? You don't have to like wait for the courts to do anything. It's already written in the contracts that if you don't pay, we move on to the next one, right? And so I'm curious the return profile for self-storage in maybe normal times, right? We're kind of in these weird high interest rate times. So cash flow is constrained just from some of the increased debt service that we haven't seen in a long time. But what does the typical return profile look like? Because you said there is typically some cash flow once stabilized, probably once the value add additional unit space is kind of achieved. Is that right?
Yeah, so a stabilized self-storage asset should make you return to the double digits. Now, I will tell you that because the institutions are paying such premiums and we can't afford to keep them.
Yeah.
They throw ridiculous money at a self-storage facility that is stabilized. They don't want to do what we're doing. They don't want to do value add. They want to buy an asset class that is totally stabilized and they'll pay a premium for it.
Right.
Because of that, we can make a lot better return on our money going out and doing that work for them.
Right.
So you're not going to make, and look, the real estate climate was kind to us over the last decade. Will we get that the next decade? I don't know. So we're not assuming that we're going to do as good on our self-storage portfolio if we roll up and sell the next time that we did the last time. But you'd be hard-pressed to make a 30% annualized return like we did when we exited if you were to hold those assets. So the reason we're selling them and not just holding them is because we're getting paid a premium and we can make a lot better return for our own selves and our investors by just churning that and going back and doing it all over again.
Yeah, when you're given a price you can't walk away from, it's kind of hard to do that, right? So you got to strike while the iron's hot and sometimes you got to just move on.
Believe me, some of these assets that we sold, we would love to continue to hold.
Right.
But the money that they're throwing at us for them, for those assets, it would be ridiculous. It's one of those things where if you're not willing to buy at the price that somebody is offering you, that means you should sell because that's what it's actually costing you.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how we look at it, and it's worked out very well for us.
No, that's super interesting. I could dig into this a lot more. I've taken up a lot of your time, and I want to kind of shift to the final kind of questions here as we wrap this episode up. So I've got a three-pack of questions I ask every guest. So we'll jump right in here with the first question. What's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate investing journey or just general investing journey? Because you've been across a lot of stuff, so...
The thing that got me into my real estate investing journey was probably two quotes. One was by Robert Kiyosaki, you can make millions of dollars a year and pay no tax illegally. I had to find out what that was about. Then I figured out it was real estate. The second quote was by Tom Wheelwright, his CPA. And that is, if you want to change your tax, you got to change your facts. And I realized that I was getting taxed the way I was getting taxed because of the way I was behaving, because of the way I was doing business, the way I was investing. And for the first time in my life, I realized that I was in control of that and I could change my tax if I changed the way that I was behaving.
That's interesting. Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad was my light bulb moment back in 2018. So totally get that kind of transition. And I've read a couple of Tom's books and yeah, it is super fascinating. The things that you don't learn as a normal, even though I'm college educated person, is you just don't get exposure to this stuff. So you got to kind of stumble upon books like that to open your eyes to the other side.
Tom Wheelwright and I were just speaking at an event in Dallas over the weekend. So I just had a conversation with him and we were both speaking at the same event.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. What event was that? I have a friend that was up there. What event was in Dallas?
The Real Estate Guys.
Okay. I think that was the one that my friend went to. Anyway, there's a lot of real estate stuff going on in Dallas for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Second question. You may have already kind of mentioned this, but what is your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Real estate or business book that I'm into right now. All right. So I am reading. You know what? At any given time, I have several different audio books going.
Got it.
And we have a book study club. Right now, I'm reading about The Great Reset. That's not a business book. I will tell you one I just read real recently, and it has all about real estate. And it's Sam Zell's book, Am I Being Too Subtle?
Oh, okay.
So Sam Zell was sort of the office guru.
Yeah.
And he built an amazing portfolio of quality tier one assets. I just read that book and it's an amazing book. Am I Being Too Subtle by Sam Zell?
Got it. Perfect. Last question. If you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you can live an amazing life just off the passive income from your investments, which you may be already there, what would you do?
You're right. I am there. I blew past any financial goal that I ever set for myself, but I would be doing exactly what I'm doing now. I love what I'm doing. And over the last couple of years, I've been very intentional about getting stuff off my plate that I don't like to do. So just in the last couple of years, I now have the team in place that does some of those things that I used to do that I hated doing and I wasn't very good at. So I would have to say I would be doing exactly what I'm doing now.
Awesome. Yeah, I interview a lot of people and the majority of the people when I ask that question say a very similar answer. There's typically more travel involved. They would get out and travel a little bit more, but most of the people are like, yeah, I'm doing what I want to do. And that's kind of what they want to do for the foreseeable. So
there wouldn't be more travel. In the last 8 weeks, I was in a whole bunch of different states. I was in Italy. I was in Napa Valley. And I'm not usually on the road that much, but it just happened. We went out and did some cool stuff and kind of mixed it in with business. Like, say, for instance, the Napa Valley trip, we hit Dallas on the way home and spoke at an event there. And we usually try and mix a little...
Just with pleasure.
Put a little fun and pleasure around business. But we're in a point in time in our life where my wife can now join me a little bit. Nice. Our youngest kid is just about turned 15. So we're having fun with that.
That's awesome. I had a friend that just got back from Italy and my wife and I are, that's kind of one of the top two places that we have on our short bucket list for a trip here in the near future. So I may have to pick your brain about your adventures there. So, well, Dave, I really appreciate the time. If people want to learn more about what you're doing, if they want to get access to maybe some of the deals that you're working on, you know, and invest with you, what's the best way to kind of get in touch with you?
Yeah, our website is therealassetinvestor.com. And our email address is info@therealassetinvestor.com. If you send us an email and you have any questions about tax, any question about any of the asset classes, someone from my team or myself will get back to you. We're very responsive. We'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll put all that stuff in the show notes, man. But no, it was awesome to connect. And next time I'm back in Central PA, I'll hit you up because my wife's mom still lives out in Carlisle. So
nice.
We're back in Central PA a couple times a year. So yeah.
Would love
appreciate
to.
Your time.
You got it.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.